You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
This is a repeat from the Best of the Climate Action Show in 2025.
This is David Rovics, and you are tuned to 3CR, 8:55 a.m., Melbourne, Australia. Step three is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do, and everything can change.
Welcome to the Climate Action Radio Show, which can be heard on community radio 3CR in Melbourne and Skid Row in Sydney. My name is Vivian Langford, and salut Babette. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present and pay tribute to the decades-long legacy of Aboriginal fights for land rights and against the destructive mining projects that are fueling climate change. In particular, we acknowledge the Wangan and Jagalingu cultural custodians and their ongoing opposition to coal mining on their lands in central Queensland, and to the Gomeroi traditional custodians continuing opposition to coal and gas on their land in New South Wales. It is vital at this late stage in history that we all learn to care for country. It will always be Aboriginal land, and now is our time to all stand up for and protect it. Last week's show was called Suckered by Gas. And tonight you'll hear more voices from the nine unions who were there and others who are determined not to be suckered by Santos Gas in the Pilliga. The verdict of the Native Title Tribunal has not come through yet. It was meant to be last Friday. But it flows from a federal court decision that the climate impact of extracting, transporting and selling the carbon bomb of gas must be considered. The Gomeroi people want the preservation of their culture as the headline. Others want to protect the Great Artesian Basin that sits beneath the gas. And overall, we must prevent that gas turbocharging the climate chaos that is already underway. This will be my last show until August. And I had wanted to bring you good news from the tribunal. It hasn't come through yet. It might be through today. Please look it up, Native Title Tribunal, to keep in touch with what happens. I asked MP Sue Higginson from the New South Wales Parliament to make a comment, and I hope you find her words uplifting. Here's what Sue Higginson said. I'll continue to stand with the Gomeroi traditional custodians and thank them for bringing fire from country to the steps of Parliament. Their fire carries the truth. There is no consent for the Narrabri gas project in the Pilliga. The New South Wales government cannot ignore this. The community have said no. The Gomeroi have said no. No decision by the Native Tribal Title Tribunal can erase that fundamental truth. So keep your eyes open for that decision. It could be really, you know, game-changing. The speakers in Macquarie Street are MC Raymond Bubbly Wetherill, the Assistant Secretary of Unions New South Wales, Vanessa Seagrove, the Assistant Secretary of the Nurses and Midwives Association, Michael Waits, someone from the New South Wales Teachers Federation, and MP Jeremy Buckingham, and from Lock the Gate Alliance, Gomeroi woman Cara Kinchella.
Tirelessly back Gomeroi people in a fight to protect people, country, culture and climate from the Narrabri gas project. Vanessa chairs the unions, New South Wales Pilliga Campaign Committee. Look, the one thing that we wanted to do, when I was saying this for 10 years, you know, you can't talk about climate change if you don't actually go and see where the people are affected on the front line with that. So Vanessa and union members have actually gone to our country and had a look and immersed themselves with people on our country. You know, you can't talk about things if you don't see it with your eyes. Pictures don't paint the whole story. You know, and You know, the kilometres don't make up the journey in your life. Remember that. You know, it's what you do within that time, you know. So Gooburoi is a very welcoming country. It'll welcome you with its arms. You know, as Sue Ellen said before, the Goodima, you know, Mother Earth. You know, she'll open up her arms and she'll welcome you to our country. It's beautiful. You know, so without further ado, Vanessa Seagrove.
Legend bubbly. Hey, everyone, and thanks for coming out today. Really appreciate the support. We're here today on the Gadigal lands of the Eora Nation, and I pay my respects to Elders past, present and emerging. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land. And when giving a speech the other day for May Day, when recognising land, accidentally said Gomeroi, because Gomeroi is on my brain all the time. And I stand with Gomeroi in this fight. A couple of years ago, unions took the decision to stand with Gomeroi people in the fight for their land in the Pilliga. We are here today because we know the importance of protecting land. And we thank the Gomeroi people for taking the stance that they have for many, many, many years to protect the land that we need, we all need. So thank you to Gomeroi for looking after the land. This Friday, we understand that there will be a decision handed down by the Native Title Tribunal. And when we started this fight, we didn't think that we'd get the outcomes that we did in the Native Title Tribunal. Well, we did think that, but we also thought when it went to appeal at the federal court, that we wouldn't get the outcome that happened there. But it did. And so let's hope, fingers crossed, this Friday, the Native Title Tribunal does the right thing and awards the land to the Gomeroi people as it should do. As mentioned by Bubbly, many of us have toured the Pilliga, led by the great Sue Ellen, who has shown us the importance of this land, of all of the lands that are there and the cultural, deep cultural history, and all of the different species that we know rely on this land as well. We know how flammable it is. We know that we've seen a number of bushfires in this area, and imagine adding to that 850 gas wells. Absolutely disgraceful. Let alone the fact that we know how important water is. And the Great Artesian Basin sits right underneath the Pilliga. We cannot live without water. We cannot keep drilling into these grounds and expect that we've got things to eat and to drink. And we need that more than we need bloody gas. So in being here today, I also want to make mention, as I mentioned to Sue Ellen a minute ago, it also happens to be my 50th birthday on Friday. So if I can ask the Native Title Tribunal to award me a gift, it would be that they look after the lands of the Pilliga. As the union movement, we will continue to stand with the Gomeroi people in their fight for their lands now and beyond Friday to make sure that it stays protected and looked after for the Gomeroi Nation for years to come. Thank you for your time today.
My name's Daryl Best. I worked all my working career in coal mines. I am now passionate about a transition to renewables and about saving our planet. And you are listening to the Climate Action Radio Show on Community Radio. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
My name's Jackie Scrooby. I'm the member for Pittwater, independent member. A huge thank you to the Gomeroi people and everything that you have done up to date. As was just mentioned, the fight that you have put up has been phenomenal. They're putting up a fight with me. Look, my community of Pittwater is nowhere near regional New South Wales. It's on the coast. But we recently, as a community, fought drilling for oil and gas off our coastline with the PEP 11 permit. And that permit is no longer. So that took huge community activation, a lot of political pressure, and it actually led in from a New South Wales perspective to New South Wales leading with historic legislation banning drilling for oil and gas off our coastline, which was the first state in Australia to do that. So that shows the power of community. And as the member for Pittwater, I stand here supporting the Gomeroi people as well in your fight against Santos's project. And I know it's not only you, but I've even spoken to farmers out in the Liverpool Plains that also are joining you in your fight against Santos's project. Because I know in Pittwater, what we want for us, we also want for other areas of New South Wales. When it comes to your fight, and particularly in the tribunal, thinking about what is important for public interest, the decision is absolutely correct that we need to be considering climate change and climate risk as part of any public interest test when we're considering decisions when it comes to native title, but also decisions for New South Wales that relate to any new coal and gas projects. So I stand with you today. I'm here in New South Wales Parliament now, putting pressure on the New South Wales government, who must recognise that we are not meeting our emissions reduction targets, and it makes absolutely no sense to be on one hand not meeting our emissions reduction targets and on the other hand working to support projects that have been described by everyone, whether it's scientists or politicians, as a real climate bomb. So climate risk is one of the biggest challenges facing New South Wales, and as a member of Parliament now, I'll be putting pressure on the government to explore different ways. We don't need new gas. We need to follow jurisdictions like Victoria, who have no new gas in homes. We need to be looking at ways to reduce demand. We have enough gas already, and we don't need this project. So I'm with you, and Pittwater is with you on this massive fight that you have on your hands. Congratulations for everything you've done to date.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM. Visit the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au/podcast to hear the most recent recording from each show, or 3cr.org.au/streaming to listen live.
You're listening to the Climate Action Show on Radio 3CR. We're at a rally about the need to consider the climate chaos caused by allowing more Santos gas to flow from Gomeroi land. This is Michael Waits from New South Wales Nurses and Midwives Association.
I first want to thank Aunty Rhonda for her welcome to country and remind all of us that welcome to country is an important and significant thing that absolutely must continue. The people that were arguing against welcome to country and acknowledgement of country are the same fascists that are demanding more fossil fuel, and it is both of those things that we stand against here. I want to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are here today, Gadigal land. I was fortunate enough to be born and raised on Darug land. I now work, live and play on Gadigal land. And we are absolutely humbled to be invited by the Gomeroi to come and help and speak out against the gas fields that are proposed by Santos. When nurses and midwives come to rallies like this, we come for two reasons, two very important reasons. First of all, at the beginning of all of our meetings, we stand up and we acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, and we acknowledge their ongoing connections to the land, waters and culture. And you can't make a statement like that without standing by it and joining actions like this today. Our words must not be shallow, our words must mean something. For nurses and midwives, we understand the deep connection for that culture, land and water, and the impact that that has on people's health, people's physical and mental health. And so the very importance of making sure that we respect the request of the elders of that land in saying no to gas mining and saying no to the further pollution of that land and that water and the deterioration of that culture. We must respect that. We respect it as healthcare professionals. We respect it as human beings. The other thing, the other reason that we stand here today in solidarity with all of you is because of the impact on health of climate change. We know that as the planet warms and as we see more and more water coming into the system because of that warming environment, we see increased respiratory diseases, we see increased cardiovascular diseases, we see increase in mental health diseases. We see the deterioration in the quality of our land, our food, and our water. As healthcare professionals, we must stand against that. And so for those two reasons, we are very proud to stand here with you today in solidarity, and we call on the Labor government to do the right thing. Both at the federal and state level, the people have spoken. Now they must be bold with that voice. They must not sit down quietly and do what the fascists want them to do. They must stand up for the people wherever they are, whoever they are, for the health of the nation and for the health of the cultures. I want to finish by saying we learnt today that Mother Nature is calling and that we must listen. I want to assure you that the New South Wales Nurses and Midwives Association is listening, and when you call, we will come as we have today and as we have every time you come to fight against Santos. Thanks for having us.
One, I'm Moraine. I'm a Wurari Gomeroi man. Moraine was the name given to my grandmother. She's from the Three Mile Tinga area, which is on Gomeroi country. I'm here with the New South Wales I'm here with the New South Wales Teachers Federation. So I've got a fair few supporters here. And this is really important for us too, because we're all about truth telling in our schools, in our curriculum, how we're going to teach our kids that we let this go. We're going to be teaching generations and generations of students and kids in our schools that we stopped on this and we let it go. So we've got to keep fighting, keep pushing, and keep the truth-telling happening in our schools. And I want the truth-telling to actually change for what's happening now, especially around our environment. So thanks.
Thank you, brother. Oh, Jeremy's finally turned up. Probably having a toke out the back. Don't worry, I know it's medicinal. Good to see you again, mate.
Yeah,
so obviously this is Jeremy Buckingham. He's in the upper house as the leader of the Legalised Cannabis Party. He's also the chair of the New South Wales Parliament's Joint Standing Committee on Net Zero Future. We welcome you here today to say a few words. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for your continued resistance, and thank you to the Gomeroi Nation. I'd like to acknowledge their long, proud resistance to this crazy proposal for coal seam gas in the Pilliga, and their stewardship of this land for generations going back. It is an incredibly important ecological and cultural asset, the Pilliga, an absolutely fundamental part of our biodiversity, our precious groundwater, and of course, invaluable to the cultural life of the Gomeroi people and the people of Australia. It has to be protected. In an age of climate change, it's absolute madness for climate impacts not to be considered in the public interest test. The Gomeroi have led that fight. They have taken it up, and it's now up to the tribunal to recognise the science, recognise that we've got to move beyond fossil fuels. In an age of climate emergency, we need to keep gas and coal in the ground. And the message has never been louder, never been louder. Look at the election just 3 days ago. Peter Dutton, no bigger friend of the gas industry. An absolute shill of the gas industry, turfed out. doing Gina Rinehart's bidding. So the message to government is no new gas, no new coal. The message to the tribunal is respect the will of the Gomeroi people, the people of Australia. We want to keep gas in the ground, coal in the ground. I'll be fighting in Parliament every day to prohibit coal seam gas. I've been doing it now for far too long. I'm raising the issue on the Joint Standing Committee on Net Zero. The Net Zero Commission, everyone, the Productivity Commission, they have all said we cannot meet our climate targets and start letting methane off into the atmosphere. So no coal seam gas. Let's stand with the Gomeroi. Let's move to a net zero future, and let's do it right now. Thank you, everyone.
I know a lot of you here, but I'll introduce myself. I'm Cara Gomeroi, traditional custodian from Narrabri. I also work for Lock the Gate Alliance. Yep. And just what I do. So I'm just me. I'm Cara from Narrabri. I'm a Gomeroi woman. I'm a community member. I'm a unionist of the unions now. And I work with all you guys in the environment groups, and we need a seat at every table. So I've been doing that. And I just want to thank everyone for coming here today. We've been working on this for a long time. And I've lost my little note, but it's not much. So my work has been around telling people the impacts of the mines on our country. You know, and what we need grassroots people who are feeling this. And I think that supporting Gomeroi, supporting us grassroots people who are here is successful. We could see that through the native title. We could see that through our rights and interests being heard all over Australia, all over the world, which is amazing. The Narrabri Gas Project is a very feared project all over Australia. And the government seem to think that they can push forward, scaring us, all so they can profit. So part of what I do is storytelling, and I'm so honoured to have Uncle Raymond Weatherall, Aunty Sue Ellen, our Gomeroi nurses, our Gomeroi education to come here and tell a story about how strong we are, how solid we are, and how we're going to keep up the fight against Santos. And with that, we've got all of our solidarity groups here. And we are fighting together, solidarity together. As Sue Ellen said today, that we are working for all of our human rights. And that's our water. And what we've been gifted today is this artwork of the Great Artesian Basin from a Gomeroi man from Moree, which expresses our connection and our connectivity. We all... And if you could see the artwork, you could see all the layers and all the layers and all the flow, and how we all connected on top of the Great Artesian Basin. And I just really like having this here today. And we're going to thank Gomeroi for gifting it to us, but also remembering that why we're all here and the solidarity. And and water is life. And we've got the writing on the back with the water family. So we're all together, we're hearing this together, and that we can stop the Narrabri Gas Project and teach the government, I don't know, how to act right maybe. So.
Ngadja Gurujan, Gunderman. This is Stephen Pigram from up Broomway, Yauru country. And it's great to be down in Melbourne, and you're listening to 3CR Community Radio. Been here for a long time. Where I belong.
Hey everyone, I'm Bella, and you're listening to the Climate Action Show on 3CR and Skid Row. It's easy to get burnt out fighting for climate action, feeling stuck in a loop of dread and worry about our future's possibilities. But possibly, a better way at looking at our future is with an open mind and optimism for potential solutions. even with these losses, as complete abandonment now will create for a planet we really don't want to and can't live on. It's about staying courageous, compassionate, and prepared. Today I'll dive deeper into these ideas with Simon Kerr, who I was lucky enough to interview. Simon has done a massive amount of environmental research and studies, including a master's in applied science in environmental management and a PhD in political ecology. At the moment, he is currently an honorary research fellow at La Trobe and engagement lead on a 4-year Commonwealth-funded water and environment research program on the Murray-Darling Basin. He also has a keen interest in music and arts, tying his interest in climate change and music into one big project, Music for a Warming World. We'll be diving into what this project is, as well as his most recent album, Only One Way to Head, directly connected to the project.
Hi, Simon. So it's so good to finally meet you, and thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. I was just hoping if you could give us a bit of a brief overview about what your project for Music for a Warming World is about.
Yeah, well, look, thanks for the opportunity to have a little chat about this. Music for Warming World is a project I've been running for the last nearly 10 years. It's a live music show with large-scale multimedia. And it's a bit unusual. It's like a normal gig, except it's got the visuals, but also it's got a focus. And so clearly the focus is on what's happening to our the climate system and what that means for us as human beings and for other forms of life on the planet. So we've been telling that story using music and visuals to try to communicate something around that stuff.
Yeah, nice. So what decided you, what made you decide to use musical storytelling as a way of increasing awareness about these climate change issues and our possible new future?
I think the weight of responsibility for the future was going to be. While I was working at universities, and I still am, my primary role wasn't in speaking, it was in management stuff. But I had another plank, another sort of aspect to what I was doing, which was music. And I realized very few people were using music in this way. It's not easy to do, but no one was actually doing it. So I thought, well, A, there's an opportunity, but B, I really wanted to make a positive contribution to people's experience of the climate challenges that we've got. And music is a great way of helping us feel our way into those things and experience not just experience the emotions, really, I guess, of what the science is telling us. Those twin themes.
Yeah, so you'd say there's sort of more an emotional advantage to using music as a way of communicating these ideas.
I was tired, frankly, of going to seminars and hearing people say things like, well, here we go. The conclusion is the science is telling us, you know, all the ice caps are melting, the glaciers are disappearing, our sea level's rising, and basically it's a very tough future. Right, thanks for that coming along. Let's go and have a beer. You know, it's like,
yeah.
it's like any other subject, like a poetry reading or you know, a discussion of, you know, some piece of new technology. There's no emotion connected to it. It's like, but this actually is really powerful. This really impacts our lives, and yet there was no space for emotions or expressing it. Now, I understand the role of science, obviously. You know, I've lived in the science world for a long time, and the science was telling us this, but there was no venue or way of actually expressing what we're feeling about it. And I thought, well, music allows us to engage other parts of our brain and other parts of our being in a way that just intellectual discussion doesn't.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely see that. I was going to ask as well, so along with this project, you also have a few albums underneath it. Your most recent one you've got is Only One Way to Head. So that discusses heaps of themes, three main themes, which was acknowledging and letting go, courage and compassion, and regeneration. So I guess my question was, do you still feel today that these three key themes represent how you best think we should consider our future with the climate crisis and are sort of like the best ways of looking at it?
So the stories we tell ourselves in the 90s when the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, came out, are very different stories than we tell us now. In the 2010s, we had a lot of climate denial. So the sort of stories that we were telling ourselves as a society, and also what the, I guess, the climate response, climate action community was, are different than I think we need today. Only one road ahead was, I guess, my grappling with how do we live with courage, because it was very clear that we are going to race way past the Paris Agreement of or aspirational goal of 1.5 degrees above the long-term average. We're now sitting on that at the moment, actually. The last 2 years, with the planet's been at 1.5 degrees over that long-term average, which makes a really big difference to the extremes that we feel. Doesn't make a difference to the day-to-day weather. 1.5 degrees is nothing in the weather, but in the climate system, it makes a tremendous difference to the sorts of extremes we're experiencing. And we're likely, to be frank, to hit at least 2.5, if not 3 degrees. That's the way that I've seen the projections. Is even with the best of efforts, and there are a lot of good efforts now, it's just such a big job to pull back on the way, all those ways that we release carbon, and all the replacement technologies we need, and the investment and the money it's going to take to do that. It's going to happen, but it's going to take a while. In the meantime, the planet's just going to get hotter. So back to your question, though. So what you asked really about, do I still feel the same way? I have pivoted very strongly around two themes. One is, we now need to have a serious conversation about preparedness, because even if Australia went to zero emissions tomorrow, which is an impossible job anyway, but let's imagine we did. Bang, no more emissions. Yay. We've now got a safer planet, would be the feeling a lot of people have. But the reality is we haven't, because what Australia contributes is something like 1.5% of global emissions. Or if you add our exports, it's about 5%. Even if 5% is taken out immediately, it's not going to change the climate that's going to the future climate of Australia. So whatever we do now, and we should do everything we can to do our part, we have to. We are locked in to a much tougher, more dangerous, and much more costly environmental future. The thing is, so let me put it sort of in a phrase. We're not prepared for what's already happened, let alone what's coming. And that means societally preparing as individuals, thinking about where we live, where's a safe place to live. How do we prepare ourselves against heat? Are we out of harm's way? And it all comes back to place, where we live. And there are some other stuff as well, things like probably something a lot of young people don't think about that much, but the issue of insurance. Can you get insurance after a bushfire? Can you get insurance after a flood? But it's bigger than that. It's the whole question of, are we able to insure, or insurability? Because if you can't insure something, you can't borrow money from the bank to rebuild your home or rebuild your business, because the bank won't loan it, or your farm, the food system, And so there's a whole lot of people are going to be reliant upon dwindling state resources, and that's going to put a lot of people in very difficult position, and a lot of people who are currently, reasonably well off as well. It's not just the marginal. Although they will be in the harm's way more than wealthy people, but and heat waves are coming. Very few of us have thought about securing our homes or finding safe places. And I mean, listen, a lot of work being done on this, but they are the really big things.
Yeah, nice. I would definitely agree with that. And I think in a way, looking at climate change now is more of a thing that we need to be prepared for, and preparing for these more extreme events in this weather and how it's going to affect us or you personally, like where you live, your job. I think that is a good way of looking at it. I know in a sense, sometimes people tend to feel burnt out, you know, for climate activism or scientists, you know, you feel a bit burnt out and worried about the future and all these possibilities. But I think now with the way we're heading, it's better to sort of look at, well, what can we do in that future? If this is the road we're heading down, so what can we do now? And I was also going to say the second theme, courage and compassion, I think that's super important as well in this album. And I think that also helps as well, you know, because the first theme being acknowledging and letting go and being that prepared. I think it's also important to acknowledge, you know, you still have to be. I still have to have courage for the future, still have to have compassion. You know, you can't give up just because things may get worse or things are going to happen. You've still got to keep going. So, in regards to music in this way, do you think that music and art is maybe a necessary part or sort of it could play an element in working through climate change and some of the solutions for the future?
Absolutely, for sure. I mean, there's a sort of a reality check. You know, music won't change how much carbon's in the atmosphere. It's, you know, it's not going to build sea walls to keep out sea level rise. It's not going to help people move and relocate, you know, in a really costly way to safer places, which they're all going to have to do. But it does help us. The tradition of music has always brought communities together around a common sort of, not even a common theme, just a common experience. So, sh particularly community music, sharing music together, whether it's a live concert or something like that, brings a form of solidarity that you realize you're not alone. And also, for, you know, this is totally legitimate. It's an escape. It's an escape from the, and it gives your brain a chance to have a rest. You know, that's really important. Because I agree with you, this cycle of despair and worry, then you find new hope, and then you go back into despair again, you know, is probably one we're all going to experience on an ongoing basis. But we sort of recognize that, yeah, we will get despairful at times. It's okay. We won't stay there. We don't want to stay there. We keep moving, and we'll find new hope, and we'll keep on. You know, we'll keep on finding ways to be humans, which is connecting with each other, supporting each other, and driven by, I hope, compassion and care for each other, sustains us. And the thing I know at the core of my heart, and I'll see this evidence for this too. I mean, there's sometimes, obviously, in the middle of a war zone where life isn't pretty, is pretty tough. But even in war zones, you know, people get married, they go dating, you know, they cook nice meals for each other if they can, you know, all that sort of stuff that they do that make good this life. They go for walks, you know, when it's bombs aren't falling, they go for a walk in what's remaining of the forest. And that's an extreme example, of course. But you know, we're still going to have a fantastic time. It won't always be super hot. It won't always be pouring with crazy rain. And, you know, we can still learn to celebrate our lives as they are, recognizing that everything is changing. We are in a new era. It's the climate era. It's not just a thing, an issue. It's actually a new era that we've moved into with all its challenges and opportunities as well.
Yeah, nice. Well, thank you so much. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have today for this interview, but I'm so grateful to be able to speak to you today. I'm sure everyone who's listening in is also grateful to hear a bit about what you do and about your project and your album. Is there anything, well, if listeners want to discover more about any of your work or your music, yeah, where should they look to?
They can find us on the web, including a new project that we're working on, which is really a celebration of the more than human communities. Remembering that we are all part of nature. So, music for a warming world. If you just Google that or whatever search engine you do, you'll find it. And
Thanks.
thanks for the opportunity, Bella. I really appreciate the chance to talk, and I hope people take the future seriously, because the more of us that do that, the better off we're all going to be, the safer we're all going to be in the future. And don't lose hope, because life will still go on. We just hope that, the better prepared we are, the better that life will be, is basically the message.
Yeah, nice. Well, thank you so much again. And that's a good message to end on. Keep hopeful.
Absolutely. Okay, take care. Thanks for the conversation. I really enjoyed it.
You too. Thank you.
There are many civil society groups focused on climate change, and we've heard tonight from Lock the Gate Alliance, nine unions, the Gomeroi traditional owners, and two New South Wales MPs. Then we heard about No Music on a Warming World. At the international level, the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty people report that fossil fuel phase-out is taking shape. In Europe, after decades of dependence on Russian gas under Putin, they're now facing new dependence on gas under Trump. So governments are focused not on securing new supplies of coal, oil, and gas, but phasing them out altogether. The EU plans to fully phase out Russian gas by 2027, for example. Meanwhile, the horrors of Gaza have woken up many people in the global north to just how brutal our colonial mentality continues to be. But I think not enough people have been woken up, and it's our duty to take action. Yet so many people wince when I talk about that, and they say, well, what can you do? I know there is gas and oil under the Mediterranean, near where Trump wants his Riviera of the Middle East. Will climate people wake up to the fact that these human rights violations we're seeing now and violations of nature are going to end up contributing hugely to climate change? I'm grateful to 3CR that I can be a campaigning broadcaster. I feel we have agency at least to bring you the voices of people who feel a duty to life, to our species, and to all those other species dimly aware that they have to survive. And to give you a shot of courage, here is Mia Mottley. She's the Prime Minister of Barbados, speaking at a United Nations meeting in September 2024. She's a shining leader for climate justice and finance among the most vulnerable nations. And I hope she gives you some inspiration and that you join up with some of the climate action groups and human rights groups who need your efforts right now.
Much, Madam Chair, President of Namibia, the Deputy Secretary General, my dear sister, President of the General Assembly, President Yang, brothers and sisters. We are here on a Saturday afternoon from so many different corners of the earth because we know that our time here and our commitment matters more than ever. As we speak, war rages in the Middle East, in Africa, in Europe, and in the Americas, while there is no declared war, there is conflict that causes the loss of lives because of access to assault weapons and all of those other things that literally have undermined citizen security in our hemisphere. We are here in the season of superlatives, from the driest to the wettest to the strongest storms. Every possible thing that we could imagine that can disrupt our way of life from the environment and the range of biodiversity that is so essential to the balance of our earth has already been affecting us. And we are here generations after countries declared independence with the intention of being able to deliver for their people the best life possible, but constrained, of course, by the absence of access to development opportunities and, most importantly of all, to the fuel, to the oxygen, to the financing that matches the needs of their people. I do not tire in saying that we cannot build schools and hospitals with 10 and 15 year money. And we're here because even though noises were made every decade for the last few decades that things ought to change, they continued in the same direction. Fueled by greed, fueled by inequity, fueled by marginalization, fueled by values reflected by human beings taking decisions, or as His Holiness would say to us, from literally the desensitization that comes that allows us to take comfort in ignoring what we see and what we hear. I take comfort this evening from the fact that we are here. But we being here will only be a record or a footnote in history if our actions just end here. Yes, the conclusion of the Pact for the Future is the seminal treaty and theoretical point from which we want to take our action. But the truth is that that may become just simply another document in history if all that we have come to do is to secure a pact. We have now to ensure that we enlarge the people, the army, the believers, the doers, who are prepared to say that in the same way history can record successfully that slavery was wrong and needed to be abolished, in the same way that we can have history record successfully that women should have the right of agency over their vote and their body, in the same way that history can record successfully that the people who live in separate and apart systems in South Africa, or regrettably now as we see in the Middle East, that they should be freed from the bondages that allow others to determine what their destiny should be and to be able to secure it for themselves and the least capable among them. If you lived at those points in history, you might well have said that the battle was impossible. But we know enough to know, as President Mandela told us, it is not impossible if it can be done, or it is impossible until it is done. This world can change, but it needs our energy, our commitment. And in the same way in electoral matters we go out and find other people to help us proselytize and canvass, we must now go out and find ordinary citizens who are prepared to say that they're not wishing to be pawns anymore of others, and that the notion of two worlds, one for those who have and the rest for those who are relegated to not have it, one for those who see people and feel people and understand their obligation to help, and others who are insensitive and do not quite frankly care or see those around them. If we doubted the power of the people, we only need to see where that power has made significant changes, even in this year that we live in. But what matters now is that there be coordinated action, and that we believe and that we sell and share with each other that there is a possibility for a win-win, that there is a possibility for us to have a green transition that can mitigate
the damages that would otherwise come from the climate crisis, that there is the possibility for ensuring greater equitable access to artificial intelligence, and that the power of regulation can ensure that it be a force for good and not an instrument of oppression or recolonization of the earth. That it is possible for us to be able to take stances that recognize that investment in education will always trump conflict and war and guns, but that there may be difficult decisions that we may have to make too. And the problem is that if we have a world that is dominated only by 60-second sound bites and 4-column inches, rather than allowing the spaces for discussion as we are doing in here, not just at the UN, but in the villages, in the towns, in the communities, in the homes, in the households, that if we don't get that discussion going, we're not going to get the level of participation, and we're not going to build the momentum necessary that can move the inequity and that can remove the threats that this world has. I believe that it is possible for us to have a win-win. I believe that hope can be restored, but I do recognize that we are at that inflection point. And those who have power and want to maintain the status quo, even though they do not yet have a plan for allowing us to live on Mars, they are adamant on not creating the space or the policy flexibility or the access to the funding necessary for us to bring along others. It is unconscionable for us not to recognize that unless we can provide the basics of food, water, shelter, electricity to all people on this earth, we cannot talk about being a successful generation in human civilization. And we all know that there is sufficient to be able to share. What is needed is the change in attitude and values. I'm not going to reflect only on the fact that almost every religion carries us in the direction of caring for the most vulnerable, because people may want then to get into the schisms and isms of religious differences. But there is, in African civilization, the concept of Ubuntu. I am because you are. I am because we are. And if you hear me repeat it all week, please forgive me. I'm not repeating it because I'm just looking for something to say. I'm repeating it because the establishment of a shared destiny, a common mission, and I pray that even at this moment of great challenge, of great, great disruption, that we as human beings will show why we on this earth are a resilient species and why we have within it, within us, the capacity to do right and to be the right person for the time by advancing not just our individual interests, but recognizing our common destiny. I am because you are. I am because we are. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm Jeffrey.
I'm Alphonse.
I'm Erwin.
And we are from the Voice of West Papua.
Tuesday 6:30 until 7:30 p.m.
News and music from West Papua.
Thank you, dear listeners, for caring enough about the climate to listen to these broadcasts, please pass the podcast on to your friends. They can be found, all the podcasts can be found at 3CR, the Climate Action Show. It's very important to highlight and promote the voices of people who are often travelling from a long way. In this case, people from Narrabri travelled all the way down to Sydney to express their view and their determination that the ongoing gas exploitation from the Pilliga to the greater world, turbocharging climate change, must not happen. Thank you to MC Raymond Bubbly Weatherall, to Sue Higginson, Nick Clyde, Jackie Scrooby MP, Vanessa Seagrove from Unions New South Wales, Michael Waits from the Nurses and Midwives Association, the representative from the Teachers Federation, MP Jeremy Buckingham, and to Cara Kinchella from Lock the Gate Alliance. Thank you very much to Bella Jesson for interviewing Simon Kerr for No Music on a Dead Planet. She's been a great help on this program. And I'm taking a break now, but I hope you continue to listen to the Climate Action Show and send the podcasts to your friends. As I said, it's the best I can think of to keep these voices in front of people. My name is Vivian Langford. I'll be back in August. Goodbye and good luck.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared. It's coal. It's coal. It's coal.
Tune in every Monday at 5 p.m. to hear the Climate Action Radio Show.
This was a repeat from the Best of the Climate Action Show 2025.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.